But let's fast forward now to the day of the bombing. It's April 19th. Where are you? You're in your newsroom. What are you doing at the television station? How do you get this call? Let's get out there.
Okay. The bombing occurs. We think it's a natural gas explosion. They dispatch all the people down to, of course, you've got helicopters going up. There's smoke and plumes and fire coming from downtown Oklahoma City. I get there. We have to park a few blocks north because nobody can get in because the destruction was so widespread. My photographer and I grab a camera. We're running in. I cannot tell you how difficult it was to even walk down there because the streets were solid sheets of glass shards. And by the time I got to the burned-out Murrah building, I could still smell the burning rubber from a parking lot that was directly north of the building where all the vehicles were still smoldering and burning.
Okay.
There was a ladder going up into the shell of the building. I stood there in shock. There was one person coming out. One person, George. It was 13 minutes after that bomb went off. There was nobody else that was going to come out after that.
Was it pandemonium out there, Gina?
It was disturbing, and I have to admit that I froze. I literally froze. Here I was in the middle of a war zone. I'm staring at this building. There's a gaping hole. I know that there is massive death and destruction, and I was standing a few feet away from a woman who was actually located in the building north of the blast, and the glass shards had sliced her from head to toe, and she was actually bleeding to death in front of me.
Oh my God.
And there were co-workers that were comforting her, and I'm standing there, and I'm thinking, where are the emergency workers? Well, there wasn't anybody. They had so many walking wounded. George, there was no one there to help.
Oh, no.
She was going into shock. She was starting to shake, and here I was with a camera. I felt like a voyeur. I had nothing I could do to help her. I looked at my photographer, and I said, I can't do this. Walk away. But you've got enough footage. So we walked over to the building. I'm watching this poor, frightened man crawling down a ladder with the help and the coaxes of a firefighter. And that was the last person I saw come out of that building.
I mean, there are times when you just want to say, I'm not going to be a news person. I've got to start helping these people. But you also know you've got this responsibility, and you've got to start reporting.
Well, you know, actually, at that point, I realized, yes, I did have to start reporting, and I knew that, but at the same time, we had no communication back with the station. We had no way of knowing where our live trucks were located. We were looking around for that because they shut down all communications immediately because the immediate response and belief was that it was a sophisticated detonation, and it was possibly a timing device that was used to activate that bomb. So they shut down pagers, cell phones, everything. So
okay.
It was kind of like operating blind for the first couple
of hours. All right, I was going to say then, how soon after you were on the scene, Gina, did you begin to realize something strange has happened here? This is not a natural gas explosion.
I think I would say it was probably within the first 5 to 6 minutes.
That's pretty fast.
I mean, you look at that gaping crater 30 feet deep and wide in the 30 feet wide, 8 feet deep, and you stand there and you think, this had to have been a truck bomb. And my photographer and I, shooting video, I was actually standing over the back axle, not the other axle, one of the axles to the truck itself.
Okay.
Because the truck was gone. I mean, it literally had a flawless detonation, we found out later. So all that was left was a few parts. And at that time, within a few hours, everybody was listening to the police radio traffic. And let me tell you about the one and only clue the FBI had to go on in the international manhunt for suspects. It was an all-points bulletin that was issued at 11:56 a.m. to all law enforcement agencies. And it clearly targeted a brown Chevrolet pickup that was seen peeling away from the curb of the Murrah building moments before that bomb went off. And the occupants inside were two Middle Eastern men. And there were very specific descriptions of these men.
And clearly, when you looked at pictures of Tim McVeigh and Terry Nichols, they were not Middle Eastern looking at all.
Oh, absolutely. In fact, this was the first and only clue that law enforcement had to go on, and there is an enormous amount of evidence what was going on behind the scenes that is not covered widely in the press and published accounts. However, I have spent years going back and looking into only the evidence that would constitute proof in a court of law. It doesn't serve the American people any good if I give them my conjecture and my theories. What I'm going to present to you tonight, and what I presented in my book, The Third Terrorist, The Middle East Connection to the Oklahoma City Bombing, I believe presents a very compelling case that Oklahoma City was the greatest law enforcement failure of the 20th century that in part led to the terrorism holocaust of the young 21st century.